There's an old question in ethics as to whether an action should be judged by the motivation behind it or by the results it gives. This basically comes from looking at judgment as the judgment of a judge in court, trying to decide whether you're guilty or not, or if there are mitigating circumstances. But from the Buddhist point of view, that's the wrong image to keep in mind. This is more of the image of a crass person. You have an intention to work on something, and your intention is to get the results to come out well. When the Buddha was judging his own thoughts, you judge both where they came from and where they went. The thoughts came from sensuality, ill will, harmfulness, they were to be abandoned. And it's because they gave bad results, unskillful results. They're based on renunciation, goodwill, or non-ill will, and harmlessness. Then they're okay, they're to be encouraged. But again, the judgment also involved what these thoughts would result in, what kind of actions they would result in. When he told Rahula to look at his actions, first he had to judge them as to what the intention was behind them, and then also the results that came out at the end. They were looking at life as a skill. And the skill is determined both by your intentions and by the results. Say you intend to make a chair, and as you're planing the wood, you plane it a little bit more than you intended to. You're judging a work in progress, so you figure out what can you do to bring it closer to what you wanted, and what adjustments do you have to make that still get the results you wanted, but not quite the way you envisioned them. So there's nothing harsh and penal about how you judge yourself. This question came up the other day about whether the factors of the path, rather than being called right or wrong, should be called wise or unwise. As if right or wrong were a hard set of concepts to bear with. Again, so many people in the world seem to be thinking that the worst thing you can do to somebody else is to judge them. The question is, what is your purpose in judging? And the Buddha judged his own actions because he wanted to figure out how to put an end to suffering. And there was a right and a wrong way to do it. He tried many wrong ways, ways that were not working. And he had to clearly teach them as wrong. And his right view, right resolve, all the way down to right concentration. But it's also paired with wrong view, wrong resolve, wrong concentration. Right in the sense that they lead to the results you want and are suffering. Wrong in the sense that they don't lead to those results. So there's nothing wrong with right and wrong. It's just having the right attitude toward them. As the Buddha said, one of the factors that would enable someone to gain awakening while listening to the Dharma talk is they found joy in the Dharma. And sometimes the Dharma is very demanding. You have to be responsible for your actions. You have to exercise your agency. And you have to be responsible for the results of your actions. And you have to admit the times when you've made mistakes, also that you can learn. It's a compassionate way of judging. That's why the Buddha said that shame is an important part of the practice. Now, shame is basically knowing that your actions don't look good in the eyes of people that you would like to impress. In this case, you want to impress the wise. And remember, the wise are judging you not because they want to dismiss you or throw you in jail. They're judging you because they want you to find the way to the end of suffering, just as they did. So judgment is compassionate. they tend to have more compassion for you than you have for yourself. So in that case, judgment is not harsh. It's not a heavy burden. Shame is not a horrible emotion. It's a guide as you realize that you want your actions to look good in the eyes of the wise. Those who mean you well, those who have compassion for you, but have a very strong sense of what's right and wrong. Because they've seen for themselves what leads to dead ends and what doesn't. And so teaching that points this out clearly, out of compassionate motives, is a source of joy, and you learn to take joy in that. Take joy in your sense of agency, joy in a sense of responsibility. That's having the right attitude. So the idea that things of life should be left as a mystery. There was a secular Buddhist teacher who claimed they didn't like the teachings on karma and rebirth because it set things out as if they were clear and settled. And he preferred to have a world in which things were not cleared and unsettled. Well, that was the world before the Buddha. Think of the people who listened to the Buddha teach, and they would say it's like someone who'd carried a light into the darkness so you could see. Someone who takes something that had been turned upside down and turned it right side up. Someone who made the Dharma clear. Because when it's clear, then you can use it as a guide, a reliable guide. It's not fuzzy. And as for the people who don't like to be told what to do, the Buddha probably wouldn't have much use for them. As he said, he was the teacher of those fit to be tamed. And people who don't want to be tamed, well, he didn't have time to waste on them. So we should take joy in the fact that the Dharma is clear, sets things out as to what's right and what's wrong. But it's not oppressively detailed about that, in the sense that there's a lot that you have to notice for yourself. The Buddha gives you standards, and he gives you, points you to the questions you have to figure out for yourself. And that's not because he's trying to be coy. It's because there's certain things that will depend on circumstances. Remember, there are only certain teachings that are categorical, i.e., true and beneficial across the board. There are other teachings that are true across the board, but not always beneficial. And those are the ones you have to use your own powers of observation to see when you use them and when you don't. There are other areas where the Buddha says you explore potentials inside you. He goes down the list of the factors for awakening. There's the potential for mindfulness. There's a potential for each of the factors. He'll give you a name in some cases. In other cases, just say, well, there's a potential for rapture, there's a potential for calm. And you have to find where those potentials are within you and how to develop them. That's where you get to exercise your own ingenuity, exercise your own independence. So it's not the fact that the Buddha's laying down a rule for everything. Even with the Vinaya, that's many thousands of rules, has lots of wiggle room. And you get to live by the rules, you notice that. So the Buddha, in pointing out right and wrong, gives you some room to use your own powers of observation. Because after all, you're here to develop your discernment, and that's how it gets developed. By using it independently, not just doing what you're told, but by learning to observe what questions to ask, what questions not to ask. How to look for the answers. The Buddha gives you whatever help he can, but he points out there are just a lot of things that you have to figure out for yourself in the course of developing your own discernment. He gives a long list of the possible connections in the mind that cause suffering. And the lists, it's really interesting, are not always the same. There is a standard common list for, say, the factors of dependent core rising. But not every time the Buddha mentions that does he mention the same factors. He adds a few in some cases, takes a few away in other cases. So there's wiggle room in a lot of these teachings. But the basic framework was always there, the Four Noble Truths. For some people, that even that is too specific. As one teacher says, well, this should just be called the Four. Because the Buddha was too sophisticated to realize that anything was an objective truth. And the idea of the being noble, well, everybody says their teachings are noble. But the Buddha has specific meaning for the word noble. And for him, the truth was something very important. After all, after he gained his awakening, he realized that if you live without respect, you're miserable. You have to have something you respect. In his case, he respected the Dhamma, the truth that he had discovered. And he taught the Four Noble Truths as truths that lead to a noble goal. Noble for him had a very specific meaning. A goal that was unconditioned, a goal that was not going to change. That's noble. And they were true in that they set out the right duties for getting there. So those truths are true across the board, as is the principle that skillful action should be developed and unskillful ones should be abandoned. Everything else, the Buddha said, is either an elaboration of those points, in which case those elaborations are also true and beneficial across the board, or there are other teachings that will be right for certain times and places and not for others. And for that, you have to learn how to use your own sensitivity. Gaining a sense of time and place is one of those factors where you exercise your discernment. It's in exercising your discernment that you develop the discernment that you need to look inside yourself. That's the problem with communication. We look inside ourselves. There was a philosopher in Germany years back who said each of us is a monad. And we live inside the walls of the monad and we have no windows. In other words, we can't see into other people's monads. We can't see what's going on in their minds. The Buddha was wise enough to be able to extrapolate from his experience as to what things were true across the board for everybody, realizing there are also other cases where the way you put together your suffering is going to be different in some of the details from the way other people put together their suffering. And so in Independent Core Rising, he said, learn to focus on any one of the connections. And you find that once you get one that hits home, everything else opens up. So in some cases he's saying, okay, this is right, this is wrong. In other cases he's saying, okay, make your choice among these alternatives. He's treating you like an adult. Someone who doesn't feel wounded by other people's judgments. Doesn't feel wounded about having your actions judged as to being right or wrong. No one is wise enough to realize that's good guidance. In this world where everything is so blurry, the Buddha brings clarity. Where everything is so dark, he brings light. And the clarity and the light revolve around, well, what's the right way to try to put an end to suffering? What are all the wrong ways that are not going to take you to the end of suffering? So we should respond to his teachings, respond to the clarity, in the same way that the wise people who were listening to his talks in those days responded with joy.